Welcome to Canvas, a show all about Chrome OS productivity. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Federico Vitici.
Oh God, what are we doing? Hi.
Is that our new changes. Description?
Oh my God. Why? What is happening here, Fraser? Please tell me what's happening.
Well, Federico, you know how people have been talking about iPad killers all these years, you know, ever since we've been into iPad and we've been doing all this business with iPad. Everybody keeps giving us this story about there's an iPad killer on the horizon and there's an iPad killer on the horizon. And it started with a device called the Dell. I've forgotten its name. There was like a 5-inch Android tablet that people said was going to kill the iPad back in 2010. And I have to discuss with you tonight the latest iPad killer, which is the Acer Chromebook Tab 10. And we're going to dig into what that might look like and what it might mean for tablet users worldwide.
Okay. All right. Well, let me just say that this is an unusual topic for me. Of all the topics that I thought we were going to be discussing this year on Canvas, the Acer Chromebook Tab 10, also yeah. what a name for mm-hmm. this product. It's not a mouthful at all. Let me ask you this. How, if you can share the details of how did you come in possession of this device? Why are you testing it? What's going on?
I mean, because I work in education, Chrome OS is always a hot topic for teachers because, to be fair, Google are doing very well with Chromebooks, particularly in American schools, but also increasingly in schools worldwide. I would say probably not hugely beyond schools and maybe some consumer products as well, but for us in education, it's always like, you know, are you iOS or are you Chrome OS? That's really the distinction that many people are making today. And this device came into my hands via an educational reseller in Scotland who very kindly lent me one for a week to try out. I got to take it on holiday with me, and I left my iPad at home and I took this thing instead. And I'm here to report to you on the state of iPad killers for 2018 and beyond.
Well, that actually makes sense. I thought, you know, maybe Fraser just wants to switch to Android and so now he's looking for the iPad version of, but no, that actually makes sense. So can you, I gotta say that I just know the basic details of Chrome OS. I never used a Chrome OS device myself. I think I've seen one, like in demos in stores and stuff like that, but I never actually spent more than 10 minutes using Chrome OS. So can you give me the basic outline of what Chrome OS does and what it looks like and why is it a big deal for education?
Sure. I mean, Chrome OS is the other Google operating system. You know, it's weird how, I mean, Apple has got two operating systems, if you like, sort of, with macOS and iOS, but Google has had for many years Android, obviously, being, you know, a mass market, you know, by the numbers, a huge big deal. And then Chrome OS being this other project that has been going along for years. I forget exactly how old Chrome OS is now, but I mean, it must be 6 or 7 years old now, maybe more. And initially what it was that they had this very simple laptop, essentially an ARM-based laptop, which ran this Chrome OS thing. And the idea was basically that it was all the web all the time, you know. And this is a system from Google, so you might think, well, that's kind of the most Google thing you can think of. Here's a laptop, and all you can do is go on the web. And if Google's claims about web-based applications and their web-based suite of applications like Google Drive and Google Docs and Sheets and Slides and so on is true, then in principle, all you need is a laptop that goes on the web. And essentially, in the very first days of Chrome OS, that was what it was. It was a laptop that could run Chrome, a full version of Chrome, and basically nothing else except the stuff you need to make a laptop work. And that was the offer. And it was, I would say, probably not that well received in general. If you read any review of any Chrome OS device, it's always like, really quite a good device for the price. Will satisfy many basic users' needs, but you're still stuck with just running Chrome and not any other software. So if you wanted to run even, say, Word, for example, you would be stuck with that because you can't download a version of Word for Chrome OS. Of course, as time has moved on and more things have gained a web version. So if you have an Office 365 account, you now have a version of Word that runs in the browser. So in principle, you can sign into your Office 365 account and do something with Word on a Chromebook now. Obviously, right. Google Docs has gotten much, much more powerful. And even, you know, you hit iCloud.com and you can look at photos, you can look at Pages, Keynote, Numbers, your notes and things like that as well. So all the three big suites have got at least a web face on them now. And certain other things are coming along as well. Like Adobe are working on some stuff to do with Photoshop and Lightroom that are going to be web-based as well. So it's really what I think this is riding on the back of is the web getting much more powerful as an application platform. And, you know, this device is sort of coming along for the ride. And that's the basic idea of Chrome OS. And the key thing that it has, I suppose, over Android is it has the same kind of security model as iOS, where the hardware does a verification of the software before it boots up. And it's very hard to sort of break a Chromebook in the same way that, as we know, it's hard to break an iPad as well. Software-wise, at least.
Yeah. So what happens? So you mentioned that Chrome OS started relatively simple, and over time, not only did more services sort of ship these modern web apps that allow you to basically have an almost native experience, but I suppose that Chrome OS evolved as well. So, for example, can you do stuff like, I don't know, plugging a USB drive into a Chromebook and transferring files into an external storage device? Can you do stuff like that?
Yeah, this is one of the things that felt very strange using this tab. I mean, the Chromebook tab, maybe we should say what that device is specifically first, is it's a tablet roughly the size of a 9.7-inch iPad. So despite it being called a Chromebook Tab 10, it's neither a Chromebook in the sense of being a laptop or a notebook, and it's not also not 10 inches either, so go figure. But it's basically size identical to the 9.7-inch iPad, and it has a single USB-C port on it, and as you were asking, Federico, you can connect USB peripherals to that port. You know, it has a single port to do everything, kind of like an iPad. But it was so weird to me, like, being able to just take a USB stick and plug it into this port and up popped all my USB files. I was like, you know, what magic is this on a tablet? You know, it was a very weird experience. And because Chrome OS came from laptop devices, it also has native support for cursors. So you can actually just plug in a USB mouse right into the end of your tablet and up pops a cursor, and suddenly you're off to the races as if it was a computer. It's kind of a strange mixture of an actual laptop and a tablet experience that we're used to.
Sounds like really like such a different device from what you would normally get from a MacBook or an iPad. Would you compare this kind of device to what Microsoft is doing with the Surface line? Do you think there's some similarities there?
A little bit, yeah. I would say that the experience I had when I had this device for a week was that I actually took with me an external Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and a little stand for it. And I found myself kind of like using it on a desktop, almost like a laptop computer, but with all the parts separated. So if you imagine like a MacBook where you've just ripped apart all the pieces and put a wee bit of space between them, that was kind of sort of what I was doing most of the time. And the thing that makes the Chromebook tab kind of interesting, I think, is that it's a tablet device like an iPad, which has a genuinely full version of the Chrome browser. And when I say genuinely full version, I mean like runs all the extensions, has a developer mode that you can go into on the tablet, and you can just twiddle about with everything you want. And it is the exact same Chrome that is on your desktop computer as well. So that was both interesting and useful in the sense that it had a solution for a lot of the frustrations that I found with using iOS and trying to, in particular, do all the work we do at school with Google Docs on a tablet device. But at the same time, it had a number of limitations that are probably worth talking about as well.
Mm-hmm. Before we dig into the device and how it actually worked and the problems that you found, what are some of the other sort of enhancements around the Chrome browser that the Chrome OS system gives you? So you mentioned that you can plug in USB devices. Are there any other sort of additions to the browser around throughout the OS?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that the system has. There's a toolbar and a search function and so on, kind of like quick Spotlight on the Mac, for example. I was going to say Quicksilver there. That came out of a very deep place in my brain. but there's on the, not on the Chromebook tab, obviously, because it doesn't have a keyboard, but on the Chromebook laptops, there's actually where caps lock is on the keyboard. There's a dedicated search key, and you hit that and you get a kind of unified search box that searches all of your Google Drive and the web at the same time. It's quite interesting. But there's a files application that I mentioned before, and that facilitates you. It's kind of like the Files app on iOS, except that it supports external removable storage as well. So you can plug in a USB stick and you can drag stuff from a USB stick straight onto Google Drive, and you know, that will work. You can also do local downloads as well, but the device is kind of limited in the amount of storage it's got. I think it's maybe, typically Chromebooks are sort of 32 to 64 gigabytes of local storage as well. That's the main thing, is the Files app, but then on some devices, and the Chromebook tab is one of them, you can also get access to the Android apps on the Google Play Store. So kind of think about Marzipan a little bit on Mojave. This is also possible. So you can actually go to the Google Play Store and find Android apps there, and then you install them on your Chromebook, which is kind of interesting. And I did that for quite a few apps just to see how it worked. And
how terrible is it?
Yeah. I mean, Android apps weren't good at tablet size when the tablet was running Android. And they're still no good at tablet size when the tablet's running Chrome OS either. You get virtually the same experience. But I think that it solved a few interesting problems. Let's say, for example, the Kindle app was quite good. You know, you get access to your Kindle library and a native app on that tablet. There was a Netflix app, for example. There was even an Apple Music app. So I ended up listening to my Apple Music playlist on this Chromebook tab, which was, I was sort of like, what is happening here? This is really weird. But what I found with that was the more Android apps you started running, the slower and slower the device got. And I eventually managed to seize it up to the point where even the music wasn't playing anymore. And that is quite a remarkable seizure for any modern computer. So the Android part, it fills a wee hole in it, but you also have the other thing that was quite interesting there was there's an Android version of, say, Microsoft Word, for example. So you can even download that, and you've got a native version of Microsoft Word, but I think you might have a better experience running going through the Office 365 in the browser, for example. It really and truly wants you to be in the browser most of the time.
That's interesting. And then, you know, the thought of if this was, for example, a MacBook and you were able to not to download Marzipan style apps, but just open the iOS App Store on a MacBook and install iPhone and iPad apps, like basically iOS apps running on the Mac.
Yeah.
It tells you the kind of different approach that Apple and Google have, which doesn't surprise me at all. Like, Google is going for practicality, I guess. Whereas Apple is going for something else that we don't know how well it'll work, if it'll work at all. I can tell you that I've been using Mojave on my MacBook this summer, and every once in a while I open one of the Marzipan apps that Apple has. So Home and News, I think. And they're super weird on the Mac, especially the Home app. It's got this clearly, you know, iPad design, down to the alert boxes and the, you know, the pop-up windows that open in the middle of the screen with the done button in the top left corner. Like iOS UI paradigms that really do not work well on the Mac. And I really don't know. I mean, obviously Apple is doing these tests with 4 apps right now. Things get weird, I think, the moment that you put a tablet app on a desktop computer and you try to adapt the UI to a mouse cursor. It gets really strange.
Yeah, I mean, the way that the Chromebook Tab 10 solves that problem is it doesn't actually adapt any UI to anything at all. I mean, it's literally just like, here's Chrome OS, touch it with your fingers. You know, there's no, it's very much like if you try to VNC from an iPad into a desktop computer, you're kind of getting a similar experience to that. There's not really much concession to it actually being touch-based, except for the fact that you can scroll but just by scrolling on the content rather than having to use a scroll wheel or grab the scroll bar or anything like that. But it basically is the exact same thing you would get on a Chromebook, or a lot of Chromebooks now have got touchscreens as well, so you sort of can get an idea of what that is. But this is obviously a slightly lighter package because it's not got the base of the laptop to flip around the back and things like that, which is becoming an increasingly common thing in both PCs and Chromebooks as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, so tell me about the hardware of this Chromebook Tab 10. Mm-hmm. What's it made of? What it looks like? How do you like it?
Yeah, so what I want you to imagine, Federico, is a 9.7-inch iPad that is about as thick as the original iPad, and the back is made of a ridged blue plastic rather than aluminium. And I want you to imagine also that if every time you grab it on its edges, the screen and the case creak together a little bit, which and you can feel a slight difference in the gap. And I was talking to some teachers today at school, and they were talking about different computers, and I said, look, you guys are all used to Apple products, so you may not be aware of how bad some of the other ones are that you can get. And this is one of these sort of experiences where you think, yeah, sort of really appreciate the effort Apple puts into making this feel great in your hand. The Chromebook Tab has some benefits and some drawbacks. I like the ridged back is much easier to hold than a smooth aluminium back. But then the bit on the bezels where you sort of have to put force through it in order to lever it into your hand and hold it up while you use it, that just feels like you're sort of slowly breaking it every time you grab it, you know. And I wonder how long that'll last in terms of longevity as well. Mm-hmm. Cameras front and back. And this is quite an interesting thing for a Chrome OS device, because a lot of the sort of usefulness of iPad in school, one of the things is like having a great camera on the back. Yeah, this typically tends to be the back camera that we use in school more than the front camera. And most Chromebooks, of course, schools that have got a Chromebook, they don't have a camera on the back of the laptop. So it's sort of a strange thing. But both of those cameras are absolutely terrible. I mean, I don't think Apple shipped a camera as bad as those possibly ever. And certainly not since maybe the original QuickTake camera, in terms of low resolution and low quality, or maybe the original iSight camera. But the front camera is awful, the back camera is barely any better, and the performance of both is really, really bad as well. So the back camera does do video, if I remember rightly, but it was the kind of thing where you turn it on once and you go, oh, and then you sort of forget that the cameras are there. Those are not great for sure.
Okay, so not a good camera.
Yeah.
Not a good camera, not good for selfies.
Okay. Nope, not your selfie machine. It does have a micro SD card slot built in, which is interesting. It's the teeny tiny one that if you drop the card, you never find it again, that one. And it's got USB-C for charging the device and also for accessories. So I can talk to you later about the kind of things I tested with that as well. Speakers, pretty poor as well. You're not going to have a sort of family movie night sitting around this thing. And also very, very quiet, which was something that was kind of surprising when you're used to like an iPad Pro, which can... It can fill a classroom for me without even connecting it to anything. Sometimes I've done that in school, just connect the video to the projector, but then just turn up the volume on the iPad Pro and it will fill the room with sound. But I don't think we're really used to with as iPad users having something that doesn't really work that well for audio. What else to say? Oh, the big thing, I suppose, given sort of, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but certainly angst about Apple Pencil, is that this thing comes with a stylus in the case. Actually has a little space to put it in, which is very convenient. It sort of fits in the bottom corner, and it's like a small, imagine like a short ballpoint pen size, but slightly flat and square. And it's one of those styluses that doesn't charge up. It's based on electromagnetic resistance like a Wacom pen. So the stylus itself never needs to be charged. But the device knows when you slot the stylus into and out of the hole, because when you pull it out, it comes up with, there's a wee floating window comes up and it gives you options for making a note straight away in Google Keep, for example, which is the G Suite version of Apple Notes, if you like. And that actually worked quite well. Google Keep is an underappreciated software product. I think it's not as nice as Notes, but it's certainly perfectly workable for a lot of that kind of note-taking stuff. And that's the system that is this device's kind of Apple Notes equivalent. So you can write on the screen in Google Keep, draw, annotate photographs and stuff like that and do that all with the stylus.
I've seen people be really enthusiastic about Google Keep and the fact that it's, I think it integrates across a bunch of Google services in that you can save things to your Google Keep from I'm not sure if it's supported in Google search, but I think if the more you use the Google suite of apps, the more you get this Google Keep integration, which is really nice. And, you know, again, it's one of those differences between Apple and Google. With Google Keep, it's a web service and it's integrated sort of horizontally across all of these services. And instead, if you use Apple Notes and you want to save stuff into Apple Notes, you're using an extension and you're using the share sheet. So very different model in terms of saving data. What can you tell me about USB-C? And what's the difference between using an iPad with Lightning and using a tablet that has USB-C?
Basically, you're using different dongles most of the time, but you're still using dongles. You know, it's not unless you've got USB-C everything. I mean, the thing charges by USB-C, which is fine. And I actually ended up using my MacBook charger to charge this thing, and it was fine. I tried a couple of different things. I had a USB-C to HDMI adapter, which I used in school we've got a few classrooms. I've got large flat screen TVs in the classroom. So I tried that and it supported both mirroring and spanning across that. But it was a wee bit kind of weird because you remember this is a touchscreen device with no mouse and pointer built in. So it's not but it behaves as if it's a laptop that's connected to the screen. So once you put, this is the weird bit, once you put a window onto the TV screen, you can't then do anything with it unless you've got a mouse attached as well, which you can't do because you've already plugged in something into the USB-C port. So if you think about how a projector is dealt with on iOS, for example, iOS very clearly defines anything plugged into the Lightning port as a secondary display that you can't really interact with because obviously it's not touchscreen. And if you think about Keynote, for example, the app has to own the iPad screen, and then the app is responsible for mirroring something onto the external screen. Whereas the Chromebook tab, what it did was it sort of said, well, okay, you've got two screens, feel free to use either one for your purposes, which makes total sense if you have, say, a laptop with a trackpad that you could just put your cursor onto either screen and then drag things and you can interact with the other screen with the cursor. But if you're not using a cursor on this device, then you sort of can't do anything with the other screen. So it sort of worked, but it was kind of weird as well. And what I found was that, for example, Google Slides is Google's equivalent of Keynote, if you like, which is a pretty good application in general, but it didn't actually know that there was a second screen attached to the computer. So you'd load it up in Chrome and it would say present, and it would take over the screen you were looking at. Whatever screen had the window that had the slideshow in it, it would take over that screen. So there wasn't actually enough information going between the hardware and the web for the web app to do the right thing all the time. In particular, in that case, you would sort of expect it to take over whichever one was not the primary screen to show the slideshow, and it didn't quite work that way as well. So that was kind of a strange corner to the whole thing. Other things worked perfectly well. You know, I had a USB-A memory stick, put it into a USB-C adapter, plugged it in, and up popped all my files in the Files app, for example. So that part worked pretty well, and did the same thing with a USB wired mouse as well, and a keyboard. Just plugged could only do one at a time, obviously, but plugged those in, and they worked with no, didn't have to download a driver or anything like that. It just worked pretty well.
Yeah, that's the way that it should be on iOS too. And you know, I'm really surprised that Apple still hasn't made it possible to, if you have any USB device, just plug it in and make it show up as a location in the Files app. That should be the right way to do it. And also the thing about the external displays, I would love to, when I'm at my desk with my iPad Pro, I would love to connect to an external monitor and sort of use the iPad as a MacBook, effectively, so maybe even with trackpad support. But then when I'm done, I just want to pick up the iPad and leave, and I can work from the park. I can work from my car. That's the dream, right? That you, when you're at your desk, it's sort of like a MacBook, and when you want to work from the beach or something, which I've been doing this summer, you can also use it like that. But I don't know. Is there any particular anecdote or other sort of app experience that you were surprised or delighted by when using the Chromebook Tab 10?
I think in previous times I had used Chromebooks and so on, and it had been really hard to get access to 1Password. And 1Password on Chromebooks is now a solved problem. They have both two different ways that you can do that. One is you can install the 1Password Android app, and that would work. But they also have this thing now called 1Password 10, where your entire 1Password application essentially runs in HTML5 inside the web browser. So you can now have a Chrome OS device as like a full citizen, a first-class citizen of your 1Password system. And that was always been a big kind of complaint for me with using Chrome OS in the past, was it was just, you know, I can't get my passwords. I don't know what to do here. So that was really nice to see that was there as well. But I think that the strangest thing was just having access to all the web tools that you're used to having access to, you know, things like the developer tools. And okay, some of that was hard to use on such a small screen, but I could sort of think, well, you know, imagine this, but iPad Pro sized, you know, it has some interesting potential, even if it's still pretty raw, I would say. And I mentioned to you that I managed to freeze the whole thing by trying to run too many Android apps at once and also stop the music. The other thing that is really, really, really bad in this thing is the on-screen keyboard. So I told you that I spent most of my time with a Bluetooth keyboard attached to it. And this is part of the reason why the on-screen keyboard, at least in Chrome 68, this is supposed to get a lot better in Chrome 70, but in Chrome 68, the on-screen keyboard is terrible. Like, I can crash the keyboard. Terrible, you know. And I had situations where I was typing something and I maybe got going quite fast and then the keyboard would just freeze. And it would disconnect from the app, and the app didn't know the keyboard was up, and I couldn't type anything, and I couldn't get the keyboard to go away and stuff like that. And it was,
oh my God.
It was like, oh, what is going on here? So in its current state in Chrome 68, it's pretty raw, but I think it has interesting potential, even if, you know, for somebody like me who's heavily into the Google Docs ecosystem, I can sort of see the appeal of it. Other people, I think, would definitely need to, you're kind of rethinking your workflow in two ways. One is, you're going to Chrome OS to start with, and then you're also going to a tablet. And you and I know what it's like to try and talk people around or talk people through the transition of going from desktop to tablet computers, even in a world where, you know, the system is perfectly optimized for a tablet and works really well and fast and efficiently versus, you know, this strange web-based system that you then also have some software problems and you're also going to a tablet as well. So it's an interesting challenge for Acer to sell this device.
That's the keyboard stuff would drive me crazy. Yeah. But the 1Password web app, it sounds really cool. I remember that they used to offer, I don't remember the name, but there was a hack a few years ago, actually several years ago. You could save the 1Password HTML file in your Dropbox account and then basically use 1Password through a Dropbox link.
Mm-hmm.
Which in hindsight, it was probably the, you know, the least secure workaround for a password manager. I suppose that 1Password, the new one, what's it called? X. It's much, much better and more secure. And also the old web version, it was super, like from a design perspective, it was super weird. And
wasn't that called 1Password Anywhere? I think that's what that
1Password Anywhere. That's the
called.
Name.
Yeah. Basically what that was they had an HTML file inside your 1Password database that could sort of diddle with your 1Password database while running in a browser. It was like, not sure about that. The other thing to say about this Chromebook Tab, though, Federico, is that the battery life is pretty good. A sort of 8 to 9 hours kind of thing, which I thought was kind of remarkable considering how battery heavy Chrome tends to be on mobile devices. You know, I don't get 8 to 9 hours of working with Chrome on my MacBook, for example. So I wonder what they've done there to keep the battery efficiency going in a way that hasn't been done for Macs.
Well, not letting you use the keyboard would be one way to save on power.
If you can't type.
Look can't at this battery life, but you can type. All right, so this device, it sounds super strange to me.
It is.
Would you recommend it to anyone?
Honestly, right now, it's a hard sell to anyone. And I'll tell you, Federico, what it reminds me more of than anything else is the very first iPad. You know, the iPad 1.0 from 2010, which was a device that existed, but only just, you know, it only gotten as far as being birthed and no more. And it had just enough hardware to support the software of what it was trying to do. And I mean, you know, that device launched our careers. And I think it has been a very important device historically, but you know, it became obsolete very quickly. And I think that the Chromebook Tab 10 will become obsolete very quickly. And if it takes off as a thing of interest, and I think it maybe will, because not so much because everybody wants a Chrome OS tablet, or some people want a Chrome OS tablet, but a lot of the tablet stuff that needs to get better also needs to get better for the flip around Chromebooks that are being sold as well. So if you put, say, that even the Google Chromebook Pixel, their £700 laptop, you fold that back, you're essentially using a Chrome OS tablet. So a lot of that stuff needs to get better as well. And I think in Chrome 70, which is the version that's coming out probably around about October, one of the things that's in there is they've spent a lot of time working on the keyboard, right, which is absolutely required. And a cool feature it's got that I would love to see come to iOS is when you're working on the tablet, you know, or a flip around laptop, say a 14-inch laptop flipped around, you can turn the keyboard into like a miniature floating keyboard that's about the size, I think, of, say, an iPhone 6 Plus or iPhone 8 Plus keyboard, that kind of size that you can type on with kind of one hand. And you can drag that around the screen wherever you want it to go. And I'm kind of interested in that. I think that's quite a clever wee idea. And we'll see how that goes. But obviously, keyboard reliability has to get better first. That's a really key thing to get right.
Floating keyboard. Looking at screenshots now. It looks very, very strange, but also kind of interesting at the same time. Which, to me, this sort of strange but interesting sort of sums up these devices that are like Chromebook tablets or even the Surface tablets. I won't use them because I'm so entrenched in the iOS ecosystem and the iPad. But I think it's important that they exist. And I think, you know, obviously I think competition is good because I feel like this company is trying these wild ideas, right? It puts pressure on Apple to sort of be more, I don't want to say fast paced because their cycle is kind of slow. You know, they introduce iPad changes every 2 years, but it puts pressure on Apple to be more innovative and to listen to users more, maybe, because these new form factors, they are super interesting for me. And I think, I could see, you know, maybe if this, if, you know, back to 10 years ago or even 8 years ago, the iPad will be 9, I think, in next year. If I were to choose between an iPad or a Surface or a Chrome OS tablet, it wouldn't be an interesting alternative timeline in that I chose the iPad because there was no alternative back then. But today, if I were to pick up a new tablet today, I think choice is definitely good for consumers, and I think it's basically good for everybody involved, because also, you know, Microsoft and Google, of course, they have a lot of catching up to do in terms of, you know, the iPad as an ecosystem, but also Apple has a lot to learn from these companies trying different things. I mean, the fact that you can run a browser that is also an entire OS on a tablet, and you can plug in a USB drive, and you look at iOS and you look at such a mature ecosystem and, you know, an app store with millions of apps, and you cannot connect a USB drive. Yeah. It's just ridiculous by comparison.
I think what it did for me was it sort of punctured a little bit of the mystique around iOS, where you think about the early days of iOS, we were all really into the idea that there was this new kind of purified and simplified vision of computing. And it was sort of hermetically sealed in its design, and you didn't need external storage and you didn't need multitasking or whatever. And over time, we've realized we actually kind of do need some of that stuff. And that's been put onto iOS and quite effectively too. But there's always been this kind of thing, well, there's this thing that's still outside the pure boundaries of iOS, like plugging in external storage or you know, having a mouse cursor on the screen and things like that. And it sort of showed to me a little bit like it's not actually a problem to do that. You know, it doesn't sort of ruin the tablet experience just because there's a mouse on screen sometimes. But also, and I've mentioned this to you and also in other places, that the problem with iOS Safari, I think, is this device kind of gives a lie to the idea that iOS Safari has to stay true to the notion of touchscreen and I suppose the conception of the web on mobile devices that Steve Jobs had back in the early days of iPhone, where it was like almost like a compatibility. Apple was taking on themselves the job of getting compatibility with websites, whereas this device is like, well, it just works with every website because it's the same browser that you have on your desktop. And why could we not have that with Safari? And to me, that was perhaps one of the biggest lessons of using this device, was that it was a great sense of frustration that iOS Safari isn't as capable as the version of the browser that's on this otherwise quite junky tablet that costs as much as an iPad but is slower and all of these things. But it has this one amazing feature that iOS just doesn't offer. And to me, one of the tweets that I made when I had it in my hands was that Apple could almost completely obviate the existence of this product with a single software update that just gave you a full version of Safari on iOS. And I think that's a very interesting thing. I'm curious, will Apple ever sort of step over that boundary and say, right, the same Safari on iPad as you have on your Mac?
Yeah.
Will that day ever come?
Yeah, I can see that. That argument actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So I think that's about it for the Acer Chromebook Tab 10. Yep. Maybe next year we'll be talking about a Chromebook Tab 11. I don't know.
It was certainly an interesting experience to try it, but I felt like it ended up always kind of being this one thing, which was, it's like a deconstructed laptop sitting on a table, you know, and I'm sort of looking at all these bits that I sort of need to get this going as a productive system. I'm thinking, that could either be integrated a lot better and, oh, I've just reinvented the laptop, possibly with a touchscreen. So I wonder if a flip-red touchscreen laptop might actually be the form factor of the future for many people.
All right. I think we should thank our members for Absolutely. Supporting Relay FM and listening to this show and many other exclusive episodes and extra beautiful perks that you've been able to access for the month of August and beyond, because all of your extra special Relay FM benefits and perks are available throughout the year, not just in August, but of course in August is the anniversary of Relay FM, which is turning 4 this summer. So thank you, Mike and Steven, for letting us, you know, continue with Canvas on Relay FM, but especially thank you to our members and to our listeners for supporting Canvas. And, you know, it's a nice gesture to show your appreciation for shows you love. And there's many other shows that you can fall in love with on Relay FM. So thank you.
Absolutely. So Federico, this has been a very interesting little chat. I think
we should probably also
apologize to people for what we've just done to them. but I thought we'd take the opportunity of our member show to go off script a little bit and see what the world is like outside of iPad. So let's leave it there for this year, and we'll be back regular shows every 2 weeks on a Friday morning, and we'll talk to members next year.